JC Corcoran Podcast.
I banged you here,
I nailed you there,
and on this couch,
and in this chair,
in the doorway,
the hallway,
on every stair,
we tapped that ass all over this house. Sometimes him, sometimes me,
though never simultaneously,
but one of us was hitting it usually.
We tapped that ass all over this house.
You'll never escape us, 'cause we live in your head. Just two swell dudes that you screwed here
and here
and there
and here
and even occasionally in your bed.
That bed is really uncomfortable,
right? It's like a prison cot.
On the stove,
over the sink,
and sort of in the fridge one time, I think.
And then we hit the back patio.
That's where we hit your back patio.
We tapped that ass all over this house.
How many times did we tap that behind?
Well, let's estimate.
On an average day, I would have to say 5, 6, 7, 8.
What? Too cheeky?
Hey, does this ring a bell?
A little to the left.
Oh, okay now. A little to the right.
Oh, wait. Back to the left.
Right there.
No, you're doing it wrong. I'll do it myself.
Barkeep, what's on tap?
It's me and my ass.
Ooh, sounds refreshing.
On the table, you were willing and able.
On the ottoman, you took a lot of men.
And on the safe in the closet, I made a deposit.
I also tapped that ass all over this house.
Let's wrap this up with a big finish!
But where should we finish?
Please, not on my chest. No, you'll scratch it!
On the accent wall.
On the bathroom floor.
You didn't care where.
You just wanted more.
How much more tapping could one ass endure? We tapped that ass.
Tapped that ass.
Tapped that ass.
Tapped that ass.
We tapped that ass all over this house.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Friday, August 5th, 2022, only 99 days remaining in our American democratic system of government as we have known it. How you doing, kids? You are at jconline.com. Your St. Louis Cardinals are tied with the Milwaukee Brewers for first place in the National League Central Division. Both teams' records of 57-48. That's a 543 percentage winning span there. Yankees are in town this weekend. Biff Henderson from The Late Show with David Letterman. Hit it!
I wrote a song for your team. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, go ahead.
The 1999 Yankees, they cannot be beat. And if anyone disagrees with me, I'll burn their house down.
Derek Jeter on the receiving end of that little mini concert from Biff Henderson. Yeah, Yankees are in town. Going to be hotter than hell at the ballpark. A couple of little tiny chances of a shower or thunderstorm like that, but it shouldn't be anything to wash anything out. Speaking of baseball, this was on the MLB channel. I think it was yesterday morning, and all the years that I've known Bob Costas and all the years that I've watched pretty much everything he's ever done, at least that's what it feels like to me, because I go out of my way to make sure I know what he's doing. And then when I run into him, I'll bring something up and we'll have a little chat about it. But in all of the years that you and I have been watching Bob Costas, I pretty much can say without reservation, I've never heard him have a reaction like this.
When Vin received the Presidential Medal of Freedom in November of 2016,
he was kind enough to invite me and my wife, Jill, to be there for the ceremony. And it was Barack Obama's last Presidential Medal of Freedom ceremony. And there's Vin with the president. And they really emptied the bucket. I'm going to forget some names, but Michael Jordan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Robert Redford, Tom Hanks, Robert De Niro, Bill and Melinda Gates, Ellen DeGeneres, Diana Ross, and I'm leaving some people out. And Vin was among them. Okay, the ceremony is over, and we're in some other room, I forget what it is, adjacent to the East Room. And Vin went out into the Rose Garden to be interviewed for the CBS Sunday morning program. Meanwhile, the Marine Corps band is playing a variety of standard songs. And when Vin Scully walked back out of the Rose Garden and back into the White House, the conductor of the Marine Corps band spots him, and immediately he cues the band to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. But then he hands Vin the baton, and Vin steps up on the podium, and he's at least figuratively conducting the Marine Corps band. And I look over at Sandy, and someday, Alana, I'll share this picture with you because Jill recorded it on her phone. The look on her face, now I'm getting emotional, just the pure love and connection was so touching. I can't believe I'm choking up. You're not supposed to do that.
No.
Be professional, Bob.
It's okay. It's okay. When it comes to Vin Scully, you have every right to do that because I know you guys are very close. And again, just an amazing moment. And thank you for sharing that story because I had never heard that before. And it doesn't surprise me that even the conductor of the Marine Corps band would be enamored with Vin Scully and want to just have a piece of him, which leads me to my next point, Bob. And you know this better than anybody. We are all in mourning of losing somebody that we considered to be a family member, a grandfather to many, a father to many. I mean, this is a man that has spanned generations of from our grandparents to our grandchildren. And we're selfish in that. I wanted Vin to live forever. And I guess at 94, you can't expect him to do that. But imagine how many people are feeling like they've lost one of their own.
Yes. You know, he worked alone, famously worked alone, except on network television, where he had a great pairing with Joe Garagiola on NBC. But somehow he made it sound as if, even if the audience included millions, he made it sound as if he was talking to you individually. In fact, sometimes he would even say, did I ever tell you the story about Duke Snyder or whatever? Did I ever tell you? Or, you know, you and I have been friends for a long time. That you included everybody. You know, one of his phrases that he sometimes went to when a guy tried for an extra base, let's say, and it was a foolish adventure and he's out by a mile, he's out from me to you. You know, that was a way of drawing the audience in. The little things, pull up a chair. You know, just the, it's just the start of things. He's going to tell you a story, the story of that game, the story of that season, the story of all the baseball seasons that he had personally observed. Toward the second half of his career, maybe even sooner than that, because he'd been around so long and associated with so many big moments, his broadcasts were simultaneously present and nostalgic. They were news bulletins of that game and that moment, but they were flashbacks to every game you ever remembered or every moment you ever heard him call. That's a kind of relationship. You know, Jack Buck had it in St. Louis. Other great announcers had that relationship with local audiences. But when you combine that with all the other qualities and the circumstances of Vin's career, that's why he stands alone. If there was a Mount Rushmore and you had to confine it to four announcers, you could find three other great ones. But maybe Vin's would be elevated just a little bit higher than the other three.
You don't get stuff like that anymore. You hardly ever get anything real genuine from anybody anymore. And that could not have been more genuine from Bob Costas. I've got about 10 pages of stuff here that I could talk about today. How would you like to make a movie? And because of the subject matter, it's under a lot of scrutiny because these Batman people, and you might be one of them. I don't know. These comic book people and, you know, Marvel versus, you know, the other studios. And it gets into an area here. And I've been doing film criticism for, I don't know, 35 some odd years. Most of them odd, by the way. And, you know, there are people who process these movies as audience members a lot differently than I do. Let's just leave it at that. So you're making a movie, and it's under a microscope, and it's called Batgirl, okay? and they spend $90 million on making the movie. They even bring Michael Keaton back as Batman. So they shoot the movie, they edit it, they put it in the movie theaters for some test audiences, and the results come back on the test just abysmal. Abysmal. People are like, melt this movie down into guitar picks or something because it's useless. And so nobody will ever see the movie Batgirl, a $90 million movie project with Michael Keaton as Batman, and you're never going to see it. Unbelievable. James Franco apparently is off the hook. I mean, this guy, if you believe only a third of the stuff that is being generated by James Franco in terms of, oh, you know, sexual assault and just impropriety and stuff like that, then he's not a good guy. But he keeps getting work. He's going to portray Fidel Castro in an upcoming movie about Fidel's illegitimate daughter. Lady Gaga confirms she's going to be in the Joker sequel. And it turns out Curb Your Enthusiasm filmed a death scene for Larry David, but they ended up scrapping it because they're going to make another season instead. So at some point, you got to believe you'll see that. We already know now how they're going to end the series. Let us now turn to romance. It's a good topic going into a weekend. You know, a lot of people will be humping and pumping a lot over the weekend, and we already played Tap That Ass, so why not? Here's James Taylor out with Stephen Colbert last night.
My soon-to-be wife, it would take another couple of years before we actually got together, but my wife Kim was working with the symphony then and had been for about 20 years, and when she came to my dressing room and wanted to ask me a couple of questions about how she was going to introduce me, because that it fell to her to do my introduction. So, I connected. I saw her. I thought, that's very interesting. And then, but it was, you know, it was pre-show. I was nervous. I wasn't in a romantic mood. And, you know, it's just, it wasn't the right timing. But the next day, I was thrilled and delighted. No, the next day, when I woke up, I noticed that my watch was missing. And I collected watches, you know, these not very expensive, but interesting watches. They were pocket watches that were
like
made
on a chain,
in
that kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, that kind of thing, yeah. On a fob. And this was a railroad watch that in all my years playing the Black Hole of Calcutta, playing the funkiest juke joints anywhere, I had never had anything stolen from a dressing room until I played the Boston Symphony.
Wow.
Yeah.
And did Kim steal it? How does this get back to your wife? How does this get back to her?
She denies everything. So I called her the next day, and that was the good fortune. Maybe I lost the watch, but I got my best friend.
So all the women in the audience go, "Oh, James Taylor with Colbert last night." What do you want to go to next? God, the trolley is running again in U City. They're going to run it through October and then shut it down for the winter and then bring it back in the spring. You know, Joe Edwards doesn't swing and miss very often. What he's accomplished in the U City loop and spread, you know, people said you could not go to the east side of Skinker. You could not go. You couldn't cross that barrier. And he did, and it's flourishing with the pageant and all those restaurants and all that other stuff around there, Del Mar Hall, everything. So people who are jumping up and down and yelling and screaming about the trolley, you know, for God's sakes, give the guy a swing and a miss once in a while. He's hardly ever been wrong on anything over there. Now, the trolley, to me, seemed like it was doomed from the beginning. It seemed like sort of a dumb idea, but they're not going to give up on it. At least not yet. Oh, back to baseball. I guess you heard by now the Cubs and the Cardinals are going to play a couple of games in London next summer. Be careful on that international travel. I know it's only London and they're friendly, but yeah, I don't know. Does anybody not understand what's going on in Russia with Putin and Brittany Griner? Is there anybody out there that doesn't understand that this is just pure theater? This has nothing to do with the court system. This is showbiz. Brittany Griner, whether or not she had the hashish or whatever it is, or oil or something like that, whether or not she had that or not, and I know she pleaded guilty, but that doesn't mean she did it. She may have been advised saying you got a better chance of getting out of here if you just say, yeah, I did it. So I'm still not convinced that she actually did it, although the surveillance video at the airport certainly looks like she did. For the longest time, up until I saw that video yesterday, I figured, well, she probably didn't even have anything illegal. They just said that she did because she basically was being used as a hostage and still is. You might say political prisoner, whatever. All I know is this phony baloney. But then I saw that video and it's like, it looks like maybe she really did it. Well, anyhow, all this stuff in the courtroom yesterday. First of all, you're applying American standards, and our legal system, while tremendously flawed, is still probably the best one in the world. And you're taking those principles, not you personally, but you know the collective you. People are taking the what they know about the American jurisprudence system and trying to apply it to this thing in Russia. The two things got nothing to do with one another. Putin is trying to drive up the price on the prisoner exchange. That's all he's doing. That's all that's going on here. So they charge her, they convict her, they throw her in jail, they give her a 9-year prison sentence. And now that ups the ante a little bit. And they're going to say, well, actually, you were going to give us two of our prisoners that you have, but maybe we want three. And again, getting a 9-year prison sentence for having some sort of illegal drug, it's not like William Heath in Midnight Express. You know, he had a bunch of hashish and stuff strapped to his chest and everything under his shirt, and he got thrown into prison. And again, that story is another example back in the 1970s of a country basically making an example out of somebody. In this particular case, it was Turkey. Well, that's all Putin is doing here. It's like, okay, we're going to charge you, we're going to sentence you following your conviction, and now let's try to make a deal. She'll be out in a couple of months. Biden is going to have to throw another prisoner in there. And, you know, the guys that what we want back is our basketball player. What Putin wants back, murderers, professional killers. It's all bullshit. It's all bullshit. And I can't believe people are trying to do analysis on this, saying, well, you shouldn't do the crime because, shut up. I've been to Russia, okay? I know how things work there. There's been a 2,700% increase in Google searches for sell my home fast. That's not a good sign. And also discount shopping is up 71%. They're finally going to put a pedestrian crosswalk in front of Ted Drew's after now the second person was killed in a traffic accident right in front of the place last week. Probably should have been done a long time ago. You got nothing to do Friday night. Buy yourself a ticket to see Bonnie Raitt at the Fox Theater. She is amazing. She's remarkable. Her voice is still as good as can be. She still hits all the notes. She is fantastic in concert. And one of the most enjoyable evenings I've ever had at the Fox Theater was the Bonnie Raitt concert. And this probably goes back a decade or so. Another complete sham. We were just talking about Russia and the Brittany Griner thing is the Alex Jones trial. All right. So they hit him for $4 million. And sounds like his lawyer really, really messed up. Do you know, well, first of all, they're going to do the punitive phase, which I believe is today. So he already got hit with the $4 million. Now you get the, punitive damage. And what the state of Texas has been using as the barometer for this is 4 times the multiple. So in other words, you get $4 million and then 4 times that would be, $16 million. He's claiming bankruptcy, which is a joke. He's trying to hide his money and, you can get, he might get prosecuted for perjury when this whole thing is over, too, because he sat there and he lied, and not just once either. And his lawyer fucked up and sent the prosecution a digital copy of everything on his cell phone. And so they were able to prove that he was lying when he said he didn't send any texts here and he didn't send any texts there. And they're like, we have him right here. And the judge is like, Mr. Jones. After a while, just to break the boredom, she started singing, Mr. Jones! And you're saying, how the hell does Alex Jones make $50 to $100 million a year? It's by selling all that crap, boner pills and male enhancement stuff and testosterone pills and all that survival stuff. I mean, he scares the hell out of people by telling impressionable, perhaps poorly educated people, which makes them even more impressionable, that they need all this stuff. He gets a cut of the deal and ends up with $50 to $100 million a year. That's Howard Stern money. Bankrupt my ass. And last night, by the way, he's using the conviction to try to drive more sales. He's like, look, you know, we're going to end up, I'm bankrupt. I don't have any money. You need to buy more of this stuff because I'm broke. I don't have any money. Did you see what they did to me? $4 million. And now they're going to hit me for more. They might hit me for another $20 million. You got to buy more of this stuff. And his followers are going to do it. People like Alex Jones don't really bother me very much. You're always going to have charlatans, you know, on various levels. Look at Dr. fucking Oz, for God's sakes. You know, he's doing the same thing, selling all this crap that doesn't work. It's the people who follow him. It's like the whole Pat Robertson stuff. I dated a girl back in the 80s whose mother and father were giving money like crazy to Pat Robertson.
I'm going to be closer to Jesus.
Back over to sports for a minute. The Los Angeles Angels lost yesterday. They hit 7 home runs and lost 8-7. Mike Trout's birthday is Sunday. He's 31, but he's fallen apart. Arguably the best overall baseball player in the majors. The last, what, 5 to whatever, how many years it's been. I forget what year he came into the league, but he's got all sorts of trouble. Lolo Jones, the Olympic runner, is 40 today. James Gunn from St. Louis directed Guardians of the Galaxy, directed Slither, was the first husband of St. Louis native and one of the stars of The Office, Pam. Jenna Fisher, James Gunn, 56 today. Maureen McCormick, Marsha, 66. Rick Derringer, 75. Lonnie Anderson, 77. Birthdays for Saturday, Charlotte McKinney. Oh, God. 29, Soleil Moonfry, Punky Brewster, 46. Vera Farmiga, who shot the movie Up in the Air in St. Louis, along with George Clooney, 49 today. Jerry Halliwell, that would be your Ginger Spice, is 50. M. Night Shyamalan, director of The Sixth Sense, and then, for my money, has never been able to even come close to duplicating that feat, 52 on Saturday. JonBenet Ramsey would have been 31. Sunday birthdays, Mike Trout, as we said, 31. Charlize Theron, 47. Boy, Mike Trout of the Los Angeles Angels, the same age as JonBenet Ramsey would have been. That'll wake you up. Charlize Theron, 47. David Duchovny, Why Don't You Love Me, 62. And Wayne Knight, Jerry's chubby archenemy Newman on Seinfeld, also the first guy to get killed by the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park. Speaking of movies, we had the big Hollywood-style premiere at the Shady Oak in Clayton of King of the Hill, a movie that was shot in St. Louis. Damn good movie, by the way. That was 1993. I still remember that Steven Soderbergh showed up for that. I had my picture taken with him. I emceed that thing. I had to rent a tux for that and everything. It was fun, though. On tomorrow's date, we're talking Saturday, our buddy Johnny Amoroso died at the age of 90. That was back in 06. You may recall, Johnny saw himself as a ladies' man. We met him at the age of 69 when he was umpiring down at Johnny Mac's. And we had the KC softball team and this character. I mean, he was a good umpire, too, even at 69. But he was so goofy, we started bringing him into the studio. And, you know, he was difficult to follow sometimes. You know, his stories became a little convoluted, but the guy had a heart of gold. He was the sweetest guy and made it all the way to 90. Do we have this clip in here? I think we do. Yeah, here it is.
What I like to say is when I went with my wife in 1942, I lived next door to her and I waited 5 years. She was only 14. I had to wait till she got older.
How old were you at the time, John?
About 20.
20 and she was 14? Who do you think you are, Jerry Lee Lewis?
Yeah. So anyway, I finally got a date from her. I worked hard to get this date.
Where'd you take her?
To the Columbia Theater.
Did you bring her cans of Johnny
Southwest?
This is the story.
Did you do the old popcorn trick?
No, I bought a pack of gum. 13. Okay. Oh, I know. So we walked hand to hand. We went to the show. Sat in the back row, naturally.
Sat in the back row on the first day with a 14-year-old girl?
No, she was older than that. She was 19 when I dated her.
Oh, 19. So yeah, now you're like 30.
30. No. Yeah. Well, anyway, We walked instead of using my car, and we got to the show.
So which was unusual because it was a drive-in.
Soon the show was over, we started to go. We looked, boy, it's raining like hell. My gosh. She says, how are we going to get home? I said, honey, just stay right here. I'll be right back. I flew out of the show, ran down the 5 blocks, got soaking wet. And I brought the car back, and I gave it to her. She says, honey, you're a great guy.
Oh, attaboy.
All right, what
attaboy.
A man.
Attaboy.
I thought she had left with somebody else.
And she said,
and he came back, and she was gone.
Yeah, she was there.
Happy 44th wedding anniversary to you and lover girl.
And she married a war veteran from World War II, not Civil War.
Wait a minute. This was not the girl you married?
Yeah. I married her, not the Civil War. I don't mean Civil War. World War II.
Wait a minute. Okay. Wait a minute. Who did the girl that you got at the Columbia Theater that you got all wet for?
Yeah. I married her.
You married her?
Yeah.
But then she married some veteran from Spanish-American War or something?
No. War of 1812?
No. I don't get it.
No. We got married in 1945. I was still in the service.
And then she married somebody from the Crusades.
And believe you me, I was true blue to that woman. I could have had a lot of dates in the army, but I didn't take them.
And then she was going to marry David, but Goliath came along.
I was
going
to say, when William of Hastings conquered Normandy.
Oh, my God. Lover boy. Oh, boy, did we miss him. 7 years ago today, John Stewart shocked everyone.
I would imagine as this show is airing, there may be information out there right now that the audience might not be aware of. So I will just tell you, Doug Herzog, Michelle Gainless of Comedy Central, gave me an incredible opportunity 17 years ago to pilot this wonderful franchise. And 17 years is the longest I have ever in my life held a job by 16 years and 5 months. Thank you. The upshot there being, I am a terrible employee. But in my heart, I know it is time for someone else to have that opportunity. And that I told you they didn't know. You probably know. Not right away. It's going to be, we're still working out details. I'm up in September, might be around then, might be December, might be July. We're still working out details. I don't have any specific plans. Got a lot of ideas. I got a lot of things in my head. I'm going to have dinner on a school night with my family, who I have heard from multiple sources are lovely people.
Like I said, quite the shocker. 7 years ago tomorrow. And I think I mentioned this yesterday, but I was in Washington, D.C. on the state back in 1982, and I was working part-time at DC 101 with Howard Stern. Smash would come in later. And in addition to being on the air on the weekends, I was also assistant program director and what they call marketing manager, promotions director, which a good portion of the time involved me just counting T-shirts and real attractive stuff like that. But I did get to do fun stuff too, and I got this call from a guy who said, we're doing the screening and maybe the radio station would like to sponsor this, and maybe you could come down and just say a little something before the movie. And they go, oh, what's the movie? And I go, it's got a bunch of young stars that are gonna end up being big stars someday. I'm like, well, who's in it? I go, well, Sean Penn. I'm like, who's that? After all, it was 1982. The movie was called Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
The A-List interview with JC and the Morning Show Graham.
Mega Babe, Phoebe Cates.
There was so much stuff in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. You guys give you a hard time about
You mean the carrot scene?
Yeah.
For at least 2 or 3 years following when I was in a restaurant, would send over, carrots to my table.
No!
It would take me a while. The waiter would come over and say, ma'am, that table of gentlemen over there just touched you over this. And I'd go, themed carrots? And then somebody said, don't you? And they'd howl. They thought it was hilarious.
So not only She's still one of the most beautiful women in the world, but she's got a great sense of humor about it. She was so pretty. Oh, my God. Kevin Klein. No one man should be that lucky. Oh, and by the way, last night I posted a picture I never before seen, photograph in black and white of Phoebe Cates sitting on the diving board, and they're getting ready to shoot the iconic pool scene in that movie. And she just looks like a million damn bucks. So you can check that out on my Facebook page, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. And the Brad Pitt movie Bullet Train opens this weekend. It's about five armed assassins who try to kill each other on a Japanese train. It's just like riding the subway in New York, but with less gunfire. And with that, the J.C. Corcoran podcast is in the can for Friday, August 5th, 2022. 99 days remaining in our American democratic system of government as we have known it. We're here every weekday morning right about this time. You can listen to your little heart's content because everything is archived right here. You can email me, jc@jconline.com, on Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Continue to spread the word, please. We are in the top 10% of all podcasts in this country. We would like to stay there, and we've made it as easy as possible. You know, there's no paywall or anything like that, so people go, oh God, you know, they're gonna want money or something. No, it's free. You click and it starts playing. Thanks to our technical genius Everett Marshall for putting all of this together. All right, have yourself a great weekend. Cardinals are in first place. Let's see what the situation is Monday morning when we reconvene, and in the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.